Okay, really, let's call this meeting to order.
That's all I need. Look, I'm shooting.
You really want to see the original bill, isn't it?
I would like to see it if it's not going to...
It's the Robson bill, the original bill.
What is one we had in here before?
Doug, can you find the bill? There's one missing.
On your desk.
Okay, we're taking up Senate Bill 186. Representative Greeny?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I passed out a proposed amendment to that bill. I don't know what you plan to do with the rest of the bill. I don't even have it. Okay. It would be a substitute, complete. It amends Section 123520 of the Civil Code of Criminal Procedure, or the Code of Criminal Procedure, which deals with the grounds. That section deals with the grounds for issuance of a search warrant. There are five grounds stated. One of the first ground is that the property that they're looking for under the search warrant was stolen or embezzled. The second is that it was the instrumentality of a crime, it was the means of committing a crime. The third grounds for an issuance, any one is sufficient, is that the property is in possession of a person who intends to use it as a means of committing a crime, or in the possession of another to whom he may have delivered for the purpose of concealing it or preventing it from being discovered. Then the fourth ground is the one that I think, in light of some recent Supreme Court decisions, U.S. Supreme Court decisions, which are not binding on the interpretation of the statute, but could give rise to an interpretation that would, I think, broaden the scope of warrant searches beyond that, which I think Alaskans would like to occur. That fourth ground is that the property constitutes evidence of a particular crime or tends to show that a certain person has committed a particular crime. That ground alone means that unannounced forceful searches could take place for anything, documentary, papers, personal papers, or anything that tends to show that a crime has been committed. Take, for example, a criminal trial. There are many more witnesses than there are defendants in a criminal trial. And that's common. Now, in a criminal investigation, the same is true. The circle is greatly widened beyond the actual suspect in a criminal case. If a friend of yours, for example, is a suspect or has been arrested, there may be papers, personal letters, a diary, or any of that, which is reachable by a search warrant if you just look strictly under this grounds. Now, in addition, the judge has to find probable cause, but a lot of times this becomes a substitute for that. And what happened recently on the Zurcher versus Stanford Daily case is that a local sheriff went into the office of a school newspaper. Actually, local police had been in a riot, and a few of them had been injured, and they weren't able to identify all the rioters. And so somebody said, hey, there was a newspaper guy there. And the newspaper guy happened to be a reporter for this school newspaper. So the next day, that night, they got a warrant from a judge. They went in the office and searched it high and low and tried to turn up some photographs, which they didn't find, but some photographs of the demonstrators. And the newspaper later brought a suit under a statute allowing civil damages and restraining orders if your constitutional rights are infringed. The lower court said no, that they were infringed, that the police should have first gotten a subpoena, first asked if they had this material, and then had a clear showing that they would not have responded to a subpoena or a restraining order to produce this material. Now, the court overturned that decision, saying that, you know, the Fourth Amendment doesn't prevent third-party warrants, which means you can serve a warrant on a person who is not suspected of a crime, just so long as the material being sought is evidence of a crime. And that may be true if the evidence is actually an instrumentality of a crime, or fruits of a crime, or contraband. But as the dissent points out in the Zurcher case, that traditionally, not up until about 1967, did they ever have these unannounced forceful searches of personal papers or documents that were possessed by a person who wasn't even suspected of a crime, and it wasn't one of these categories, either contraband, instrumentalities, or a fruit of a crime. And although there were two dissents, really, one basing it on the fact that a newspaper has special protection. And I found that convincing in part, but I also thought that Justice Stevens' dissent, which said that actually the Founding Fathers had in mind to protect personal papers altogether from this kind of thing, and that that this protection, the Fourth Amendment protection, should extend to everybody, including you and me, doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, everybody, even though they're not a newspaper. And I find that fairly convincing. I think that research will show that about 97% of the search warrant issued are to grab things like drugs, contrabands, or to actually arrest persons. So only a very small minority of warrants ever deal are third-party warrants. And in those cases, I think it could be shown that a subpoena would suffice. If it didn't, the judge could find that under the circumstances that a warrant was required. So this is the point of this draft. And the one I'm suggesting here, which is pretty similar to the one that Doug worked out, both of which are improvements on the one Legislative Affairs did. And it provides that if you're going to issue a warrant solely under Section 4, none of the others, that if the property isn't contraband and is not in possession or isn't possession of a person suspected of a crime, that this should only be issued, these kind of warrants, if the judicial officers reasonably believe from a clear showing that a subpoena and restraining order would not effectively prevent the property from being destroyed, concealed, or removed from the jurisdiction. And the advantage that this process gives to the right to privacy in persons to be secure in their personal effects and papers is that the person can object. You can object and have a hearing that isn't ex parte. In other words, you can be present and say, there's no reason for them to go through my personal diary. They can just talk to me about it, or there's other evidence that they can find. But at least it gives the person a chance for a hearing, whereas a warrant can be served at any time, and any resistance can be overcome with force. And I think whereas if you're dealing with someone suspected of a crime, you're dealing with things that are contraband or instrumentalities of a crime, there's a reason, a policy reason for allowing warrants in that case. First of all, the person who is being served might be likely, most likely, to conceal or try to destroy it, and you don't want to give notice. But in the cases like Zurcher, there was no evidence, not even a suggestion when the magistrate was approached, that this newspaper would destroy it. Although it was considered a radical newspaper, and I suspect that was the reason that the officers ransacked it in the first place, there was never any showing that they wouldn't produce it. And had they not produced it, I think they could have gotten a warrant. As it was, they didn't find anything of value anyway. But as some of the other cases have shown, since there was a prior decision, prior to Zurcher, that kind of overturned the long-standing rule that mere evidence was not reachable by a third-party search warrant, meaning evidence of a crime that was not either the instrumentality, contraband, or the fruit of the crime. And now this recent case, Zurcher versus Stanford Daily, seems to have expanded that quite a bit. And I don't think our Supreme Court would go that far, I do think that we do indicate to federal authorities in the state and to other states that we're willing to take a position. I notice that already there's been a bill introduced in Congress to limit the effect of Zurcher versus Stanford Daily. Of course, this suggested amendment to the grounds for issuance of a warrant wouldn't have any effect on service of federal warrants.
Clark, what's a clear showing? What is that? How does that label it, or how does that fit in the other good cause or the other requirements?
They still would have to find probable cause under both our Constitution and the federal Constitution and Section 3510. That's usually done on a single affidavit from the prosecutor or the officer involved. The clear showing to me would be more than an allegation, just reciting the statute, that it would, just saying that they can't have, a subpoena wouldn't work because this person would destroy the evidence. It would have to be some statement the person is a friend, a close friend of the person suspected of the crime or arrested for a crime, the evidence of which is in possession of this third person. It have to be more than just a routine statement that's often contained in affidavits, just reciting the statute. That's what I mean by that. The word reasonably believe actually appears in the statute already for any of those other grounds, but I had in mind not necessarily an adversary hearing or witnesses, but something more than a pro forma statement in affidavit.
Okay. Larry?
I must be missing a word or something. What's the difference between that, the SB 186 and your substitute for HB 985?
What does she have 985 on there? Oh, yeah, that's the original. Okay. This, Doug's draft, actually, the original bill is not before you.
No.
186.
No, 985, the one I had drafted by Legislative Affairs. It just goes on forever. This is something that Doug worked up, and then I took this and worked it around a little bit.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, essentially. I don't think there's any question.
Senate Bill 186 was kind of a dead bill that was sitting in the House Rules Committee, so that's why I pulled it back.
Somebody was treating the subject of third-party warrants, vis-a-vis subpoenas, in 186 prior to this?
No.
No.
They were dealing with something.
The number.
Close.
What more can we?
it was an act relating to statutes.
We don't get in problems with the two subject rules because we're only going to have one subject in this bill.
Government.
Mrs. Rudd?
Clark, I'm sorry. I've got terrible trouble understanding that a subpoena and a restraining would not effectively prevent the property from being destroyed. In other words, the subpoena is not going to prevent it from being destroyed. Why are you going to issue it? Are you sure that's what you want to say? Or do you want to say would effectively prevent the property from being destroyed?
No. In other words, the proper vehicle for reaching this kind of evidence, where the person is not suspected of a crime, and the property being sought is not contraband, is the subpoena process, which is served on a person, and if the person then refuses to comply with it, you can force him to produce the material.
But he
can object, he can move to quash the subpoena. There are a number of steps that the person can take.
See, Lisa, this is instead of the search, you go to the subpoena.
Right. What would happen with the search warrant is that you have to move to suppress the evidence because it was obtained, and it was privileged to those First Amendment thing after it was seized. What this does is it allows you to litigate whether they can seize it before they actually get it. Incidentally, the rules chairman in the Senate has approved this language, and so is, well, the content of the language in the one that I drafted, but also the Attorney General.
I can't be the favor of this, but has anybody determined whether this will throw the prosecutors into a tizzy?
I doubt it. Doug, you've talked to the AG.
I talked to Hickey, and they're just, of course, I don't know, they never seem to get real excited until it's imminent. But I think that's one of the reasons, other than contraband, that's stuck in there. You know, although I don't think it really makes that much difference.
I think it was implied anyway.
Yeah, it was implied anyway. But like Clark said, they haven't really been issuing a lot of third-party search warrants. I can't even hardly remember any. But then they didn't have the door open to them like they have now in the Supreme Court case.
I think what we're talking about is the 2% or the one or two cases in which somebody's rights are severely violated. Normally, they would go through the screening process, or normally what happens is that the other four grounds here are the grounds upon which the warrant is issued. Normally, the material and the person you're seeking are all in one place. You serve it on the person, he's arrested, and you go through the premises, or you know that there's the fruits of the crime, the money, the goods, the stolen property, the drugs, or the burglary tools, or whatever, even things like forgery, that's an instrumentality, so that even most of the white-collar crimes are covered by these grounds, and you're usually serving on the person that's suspected. Once in a while, you want to get records, but the police, the investigator goes around in the company, says, if there's not a privilege, just go ahead, go through the files, you can see it. Or if they object because there's some kind of privilege, they say, just get a subpoena and we'll give it to you. Just so we're protected, so they can't say that we broke this privilege, so you have a judicial termination, but it's rare that there's a worry that there's going to be destroyed, evidence is going to be destroyed, and if there is, if they can make that showing, the warrant can issue.
Why didn't you grant the language so that instead of the word person, you used news media? Why did you broaden it to
use what now?
News media? Why did you broaden it to encompass everything?
Well, because I think we're all entitled to that kind of protection. I was convinced. I'd like to give you a copy of Justice Stevens' dissent. It's pretty powerful, and he indicates that there's just a very recent trend in the court to open it up in this area. The Founding Fathers really had, there were things that they had in mind to be covered by search warrants, and personal papers and documentary evidence that's in the possession in your own household isn't necessarily even the kind of property they want to cover. And if you look at the circumstances, I see no good reason for not extending what I think rightfully belongs to the press and the First Amendment, and extending it to you and me, to doctors, lawyers, as a Fourth Amendment right, or actually under our Constitution as a right to privacy. I don't think that extending it in any way hampers law, effective law enforcement. In fact, I think it improves it to the extent that they're going to have to be a little cooler about their investigation. In other words, most of this material, if it's in possession of someone not suspected of a crime, can be obtained merely by asking the person to produce it. If there's a special problem, then they can get a warrant. But otherwise, there's no reason to have the they're supposed to knock now, but if the person says, no, I'm sorry, down he goes and through the house, they can go.
But you're on a lot stronger ground, though, with the news media on the First Amendment than you are with everybody else in the Fourth.
That's what Justice Stewart thought, but I still think that logically, I think your stronger ground is extending this kind of protection to everybody. There's an additional argument to be made for the press because of the First Amendment, and that the fact that if officers are going through the office during working hours, that disturbs people, that it breaks down the deadline that they have to meet. It also destroys the confidentiality of sources, which is very important to effective newspaper reporting and other kind of media reporting if they're subject in any time to seizure. Plus the fact that, and this applies beyond newspapers, that these warrants become general warrants, because it's pretty hard if you're going to say, we're going to look for some written evidence of a crime, to not go through every piece of paper and to read and discover the contents of everything in the file. It's like one thing, say, we're going to look for a knife or a gun or for drugs, because you don't have to open books and diaries and read them to actually understand and digest the contents in order to get the evidence. But in these kinds of, when you're searching for papers and documentary evidence, there's no real limitation. So we're back almost into what has always been prohibited, and that is the general warrant, which say, we're going to look for evidence of a crime. And that's pretty much what you've got. Although you're going to say, we think there's a letter from so-and-so that indicates some involvement of so-and-so, you still have to read everything in the person's possession or the newspaper's possession. So I think some of the same arguments that are made for the newspaper apply to you and me. And I think logically it ought to be extended. And I think practically it doesn't do much except to prevent the extreme case in which an unpopular person or a person that otherwise, if he were a man of stature, probably wouldn't get busted, or maybe because he's a man of stature. But in any case, it isn't worth leaving the door open for that kind of search. But I do agree that the newspapers have a stronger ground because of their First Amendment protection. And I think Justice Stewart was right, but I happen to think that the other dissenting, there were three dissenting judges, Stewart, Marshall, and Stevens. I happen to think Stevens had a stronger position on it.
Well, I think that might be true under the federal constitution. I think Alaska, through its constitution, the Supreme Court has already defined a greater right of privacy under the Alaska constitution. And in line with the Alaska constitution, and this is state statute, that right of privacy, Representative Greening is quite correct, would extend to everybody, almost like a Fourth Amendment type of thing. But I think our constitution already recognizes a greater right to privacy for individuals than does the United States constitution in certain areas. And this would fall in line with that section of the Alaska Constitution.
Larry, what they, going back to reading the decision, what they basically did is they defined it to give a greater protection where you have another fundamental right tied to the Fourth Amendment. the First Amendment applies. Well, the Sixth Amendment, you know, it has to do with effective assistance and assistance of counsel. But that's another one that could be imperiled in our, you know, rights to privacy in Alaska. What this does is basically, if we have written, I think it's pretty well restricted too from the way it's drafted to the written word. The written word is being sought, and you have another fundamental interest besides just the Fourth Amendment, then this sort of gives some protection to the person.
Like, it could include tape. Another document. It doesn't mean that they're not reachable. It just means that, like, Nixon had to ultimately give his tapes up to the prosecuting authorities, but at least nobody had, of course, nobody was going to do it to the president, but to somebody of a lesser position, they might not have the privilege of objecting to somebody breaking into their house, or even though that one of the criteria is you're supposed to knock before you enter. If there's no answer, down comes the door. Or if they say, come back tomorrow, down comes the door. And away they go. And through everything in your office or in your home can be searched. And it's one thing if they think there's the murder weapon or something on the premises. They know pretty much what they're looking for, and that when something like that is located on the premises, indicates some kind of complicity. Or at least it's a pretty good line to draw, as opposed to saying, in the files, there is something that indicates a crime being committed by somebody who had no, not in possession of the file.
At present, do the FBI and the state troopers have pretty much the same ground rules for obtaining a warrant?
Well, in light of this decision, I would say the federals are much freer to act now. I think the state authorities would still feel somewhat restrained as that decision isn't binding, and we do, as Mr. Stone pointed out, have a constitutional right to privacy. But that right has to be implemented by statute, and that's one of the purposes of this. Is to
before the Supreme Court ruling.
Yeah, pretty much the same.
Now, if your bill or whatever this is, if it were to become law, there would be this disparity, a substantial disparity between the two.
Not in practice. I think in terms of principle, there's a disparity until Congress acts, and I think it will act. But in practice, I think hopefully the feds will continue, in cases such as described here, will use a subpoena and a restraining order if necessary. And the same goes for the state. I don't think in practice there's going to be any kind of disparity, except in those rare cases that we're trying to cover here.
How fast can you obtain a subpoena?
It's usually you don't get it at night. Oh, you can get it as fast as a search warrant. Actually, I don't think there's any. In fact, you could probably there's a less of a showing for the subpoena, but at least the person. You don't have a right to break down the door or anything else. You serve the subpoena. If the person refuses, then you can get it enforced by the court. But that gives an opportunity for a hearing that isn't ex parte. In other words, the person who's being served the subpoena has a right to come in and say, you know, I have something in my diary or I don't have anything in my diary. And this evidence can be obtained a dozen other places. You don't have to go through my personal effects to find this. Or a doctor said, you know, I don't have to disclose to you. I'll bring you the file that you're looking for, but I don't want you going through all the other files. Or any other number of things the court can adjust to secure this person's right. But the warrant on its face, it gives full power to the authorities to take whatever force, including deadly, to enforce it. And it just seems to me overkill in these situations. And it's a loophole that's kind of developed very recently, as the court, I think, under Nixon appointees, has expanded the scope of warrants. Before, it was much more limited.
Right now, Larry, it's really difficult to get a search warrant at night. There's a stronger burden on issuing one after 7 o'clock, I think, or after 10 o'clock, or something like that.
There's a stronger burden of proof for search warrant?
That's, you know, sort of a policy decision that we don't want.
It's a distinction between serving. You can get an issue that's not considered serving.
It could be issues, how can it get served?
Yeah,
that's right.
Same burden of proof to issue. It's harder to serve it at night because of police services and the other things that are.
Well, there's a statutory.
No, you have to make an additional showing in order to serve it after 10 at night.
That's a serving.
What?
You don't have to make a greater showing. Yeah, you need an additional showing to serve at that time of night.
I think, here's what Justice Stevens said, and I have to agree with him. He said, the only conceivable justification for an unannounced search of an innocent citizen is the fear that if notice were given, he would conceal or destroy the object of the search. Now, that presupposes the object of the search. There's probable cause to search for that object. That's still another standard. But I think the only justification is, again, some grounds that this person is going to destroy it or conceal it or flee in the jurisdiction. And unless they show that, I don't think there's any reason to serve a person with the unannounced search. I don't care
under
if they stay or
clearly,
not.
If you do show that, then you can have the warrant.
Yeah.
So we're not punching.
Clark, you and I have to go to a meeting. What's the committee wish to do?
I would move the bill, Mr. Chairman. I prefer Doug's wording to Clark's. I think it's clearer. But either one will do.
I'm not sure. Leave it up to the committee. I do think if you're going to move Doug's.
We have to put in about being concealed.
Yeah, add the concealed. And I don't think you have to use the word material evidence. I think you could, to be consistent, since the statute talks about property, prevent, I'd say, the property instead of material evidence, because that's part of another.
Just going at 985 or 186 then.
That'd be on 186.
Yeah.
It just, Doug's wording seems clearer to me, a layperson.
Okay. Let's see. Is there a difference between property and material evidence? Well, they have to specificity in the search warrant, so they're going to have to look for this. They're going to have to specify what they want.
Yeah, that's already required. I don't think we want to have the judge have to determine whether the evidence is material at that time. That's it. See, you already have in 4, the property constitutes evidence. He has to meet that. Now, I just put the word property because that's used in the statute.
On line 16, the material evidence would be changed to property and the property. And then
after destroyed, put concealed.
Is there any objection to those amendments?
No.
Okay.
I move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, motion to move judiciary to substitute for Senate Bill 186. I guess we're not going to have time to do 305. I want to do that. Do we have a short calendar today?
3 days.
Yeah. Maybe we'll try to meet right after session.
Yeah, and tell me. Okay, Bob, here's 305.